Lakers Collective, the Lakers off season is here. We've got a ton of things to get into, and we decided that today's show we're going to dedicate to all of you. So we're going to be taking your questions, your comments, opening up the mailbag, getting into some of the mailbag questions we didn't get into on our last show. We're going to do a lot of Q&A here today. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Tibbs. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, happy Friday. How are we doing?
It's good to see you guys. We are getting pretty close to the finish line here. We are... theoretically, if the Knicks end their series in five, we won't have a game next Friday night. And then from there, it'll be like every other night, basically, for a couple weeks, and then we're done. So this, it's been a grind where we can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Doing well. Doing well. I'm excited to get into today's chat.
All right. We've got a lot of super chats to get to. We want to make sure that we address everybody if we can here. So let's start right here. Let's go with Aubrey on our last show. Throughout, assuming Rob can make it happen, I think Trev's ideal offseason makes us contenders. With Luka coming into his prime, change is consistent. Maybe there are some of their players hit a down year. So I did a roster build where I had the Lakers. We look at a lot of different paths of what the Lakers can potentially do. One of them involved going after Peyton Watson. If you can get a sign and trade, something like that for him. I don't know how likely it is to do that. But I also threw out the idea of targeting Rob Williams in a scenario where DeAndre Ayton picked up his option and stayed on the Lakers, and having him as sort of a two-headed or even three-headed monster at center with Jackson Hayes in there. Let me focus on that part. Where are you guys at on Rob Williams? Would you consider him for a starting role? Do you think he fits with Luka?
I like Rob. I think he's a good player. I think that he kind of fits the mold of like the kind of center that if he's making, you know, in that mid-level exception, like below $10 million a year type of territory, I think he makes a lot of sense. I think he's a better version of Jackson Hayes, essentially, like a very good vertical spacer. Obviously he was taking some threes last year. That's not really what we would ask him to do, but it's more just having the vertical spacing with much better, like, versatile defense that he can work in terms of the ability to occasionally switch, protect the rim more in a drop coverage look. Like, the biggest thing with Rob is always just the health, and that's why you never want to invest some sort of substantial amount of money in him. But like, I think if Rob was on the Lakers next year making single digit million, I would call that a win.
I like him.
That question came in real quick. I just want to address it. You had Ayton opting out and Lakers signing Nick Richards. That's right. It was actually on a subsequent question that I had both of them sticking on. But regardless, the idea is the same.
Nick Richards is a player I'm not big on.
Same. I think the interesting thing with the two most realistic centers the Lakers could add this summer are probably Mitchell Robinson and Robert Williams, just based on who's going to be available and you're doing like center rankings. But both of those guys you have to keep in bubble wrap during the regular season, and both those guys are like low to mid 20s guys even if they're starting, and then you want to just hope to get them to April and May. So but I would take either one of those as a starter over DA.
Yeah, Nick Richards was my like break glass in case of emergency third big on the roster, and it was it could be Nick Richards, it could be Jonas Valanciunas, it could be any number of other guys that you could throw in there. I think I just used him as a placeholder in that scenario. All right, let's jump here. The Magic Mamba said, can the Lakers get Gobert if Minnesota needs to cut salary? I had this question on our live show last night as well. What are your thoughts on Minnesota trying to shed salary, moving on from Gobert? Is he somebody at 34 years old the Lakers should even consider if they're trying to build a roster around Luka?
I love the idea of Gobert on the Lakers personally. There's a couple reasons why. One, he's on a short deal. Like, it's a 1+1 basically. And I think you could probably approach him the following summer to like discuss a opt-out extension that's at a lower number, but that's longer term. But the way I look at it, two things. One, I just think he's the best player available as like a center among all the different guys that you could consider there. There's a certain amount of like the vertical spacing window that he struggled to capitalize on specifically with Minnesota is something I think the Lakers are good at. Just having Luka, LeBron, and Austin as very good lob passers, I think they would be able to make more use out of Gobert as a vertical spacer than Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle could. The second piece of it is, like, I view it as like a stopgap. Like, ask yourself seriously, is Nick Claxton the solution for the center position for years to come? No. Is Mitchell Robinson the solution for the center position for years to come? No. It, like, Walker Kessler, maybe, but he's probably unavailable. You know, Robert Williams, I don't think he's the long-term starting solution. So, like, you really don't have the, this is the guy that's going to be Luka's running mate, like a Derek Lively, for example. Like, mm-hmm. this guy's going to be Luka's running mate for the next 5 years. And so if you don't have that, then why not get a stopgap to give you the opportunity to try to find that, in whether it be you draft somebody in the with that 25th pick this season, or you find him in the pro scouting the way Boston did with Nimi Kato, whatever it might be. Gobert would give you a stopgap solution, a guy who could play the position at a very high level, anchor your defense, be the vertical spacer alongside Luka for 2 years until you had a long-term solution, or until Gobert signed at a discount to continue that, depending on how well he's playing, right? Like, I'm not sure how realistic it is in terms of what the Lakers could offer. I think the way that that would probably work has to involve Rui and the idea of Minnesota getting another big shooter to join their front line. But like, in a vacuum, the idea of Gobert being a Laker is something I think he would just be awesome. I think he'd be awesome in a Laker jersey.
I'd like them to get the long-term answer at center, but I do agree finding that guy is going to be difficult. Gobert certainly gives you something defensively. I don't mind that aspect of it. Our most recent memory is of him getting outplayed by Wemby, and I think that downplays how good Gobert actually was this season, especially, you know, during the playoffs. It's Wemby. He's going to make a lot of guys look bad. So that's part of, I think, the issue with Gobert when you look at what the fan reaction is to the idea of Gobert joining the Lakers. I think my question would be, what's the opportunity cost? If you're going to take in that, what is that? I think he's on like $34, $35 million contract. Are you just absorbing all of that?
He's got a $3 million trade kicker too. So I think his post trade salary is like almost $39 million. It's a big chunk. I'm with Jason in the sense of, I think if he's a stopgap, or if you exhaust like the longer term options, if you can't trade for Lively with Dallas, if I would probably prefer Kessler and Durin just as like younger options. Gobert's 33, Kessler and Durin are both in their early 20s. Like I might just prefer taking a swing on those guys as like, can you grow into something long-term? But if you can't get one of those two guys, obviously they're both restricted free agents. Lively, I'm skeptical. Dallas is still going to want to trade with the Lakers, even post management change. If it's like Rudy Gobert or DeAndre Ayton, or Rudy Gobert or Mitchell Robinson or Rudy Gobert, like, there's also the opportunity cost to Trevor's point, especially with that salary. But I mean, it also depends. You could operate as an over the cap team and then make a trade over the cap for Gobert, mm-hmm. which that might be more appealing to me if you retain some guys and then go over the cap and then make a trade that way. But I mean, this is naturally going to lead us to our Giannis conversation, which I know we got a bunch of questions about this, but like, I think it's just trying to find that bit, like finding a big who can hang in this series that we're watching in the Western Conference Finals right now. Like that, it's a very short list. And that's, I think, the challenge for the Lakers, because having a big man who could hang with Wemby and Chet and Hartenstein, like there's not many of them.
Jovan, let me ask you this, because this is something that I've been thinking about a bit lately. Are we underselling the notion that the Lakers could really become really stay as an over the cap team? Because I think most of us have been operating as though they will go under the cap and downplaying the likelihood that they do go the other way and stay over the cap and then potentially have a mid-level exception to use rather than cap space. What do you think is the likelihood that they decide, you know what, we're just going to try to keep all the guys that we've got and then have $15 million to spend and go that way if we structure the salaries correctly?
I'd still say it's probably 30-ish percent. I would give it a good chunk of them being more likely to be an under-the-cap team. But if you really want to prioritize retaining the group, it's really easy to just go over the cap, right? Like you could sign LeBron to $30 million or whatever, something that's like not, not 50, but like, you know, somewhere kind of higher than some of the numbers that have been thrown out there. You could retain Rui for 18-20. You could give Marcus a decent bump, and then you could even retain Luke and have, I guess Marcus is actually the tricky one, because you would probably have to use an exception to retain Marcus. Mm-hmm. But putting Marcus aside, you could retain like a lot of your key free agents, Jackson, Austin, etc. And then you have to figure out what you do with Marcus, but you'll have now some salary you could trade in the form of Vando, Jake, Dalton. You could get to like $22 million with those guys, plus draft assets. And then you also have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So I guess between those two, you like, realistically, and this is where, again, I keep coming back to the honest thing, is like, it's really difficult to see the Lakers adding more than like two good starting slash rotation players to the roster. If any form of them adding like three or more is going to require losing multiple key, you know, it's like you're going to lose Rui and Luke, you're going to lose Marcus and Luke, you're going to lose Rui and Marcus. Like you're going to lose two of those guys at a minimum if you're adding three plus guys. It's just unless LeBron takes the minimum, or you just lose LeBron, which is an entirely different conversation. Like, it's just the math doesn't math. So if I'm looking at it in the lens of like, okay, you're probably adding two rotation, you know, starting slash good bench guys, would you rather just go the above the cap route and at least retain the guys for sure, rather than try to do the cap gymnastics of like, we want to add two guys and keep these guys and hope they don't leave, or we get outbid or whatever. So I think there is a pathway for them to operate as an above the cap team and actually like improve the roster in a notable way. But I think for them, like, to add the real big fish, I think you do need to operate as an under the cap team.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree. The challenge is the best free agents are Lakers. So inherently you could kind of sort of win free agency by staying above the cap and keeping your own guys. But you need to make additions to this team. And that's going to be the challenge for Uplinka. One of the comments here, Meta World Fleece said, I'm hoping we can get Peyton Watson. And then I've got another comment that just came in here saying that I've watched Peyton Watson, and the more I watch him, the more I think the defense is cooked. I'd rather have Tari Eason for cheaper. Luka will get good looks for him. Jason, where are you at on Peyton Watson? If you could get Peyton Watson on a reasonable salary, let's say it's a sign and trade with Denver, would you be willing to do that? And would that solve, or at least be a step towards solving, some of the perimeter defensive issues?
I actually prefer the idea of paying a guy like Peyton Watson in the $25 to $30 million territory to even going after a guy like Herb Jones. I know that sounds crazy, but like, I think that there's a certain amount of we've seen this in every single series, but like, like when you play Minnesota, the ability that like Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid and Terrence Shannon and Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle to like all put the ball on the floor and score is just so valuable against really, really good defenses. I'd even argue like with the Spurs, there's obviously this Wemby versus Shea dynamic, but if you really dig into the numbers, the Wemby groups are winning the series. It's been the Wemby off groups that have been getting beat. And there's this dynamic where like when Wemby's out there, they can get enough stops. But the real thing that's driving a lot of their offensive success is like, in addition to all the attention that Wemby garners, they just have like four dudes who can put the ball on the floor and create a shot for themselves. Like Dylan Harper can do it. Steph Castle can do it. Devin Vassell can go to a spot and shoot over Jared McCain. Keldon Johnson can take Jared McCain to the basket and bully him for an easy two. There's just like a depth of ball handling that I think is a real advantage for a lot of these really good teams. And like even just look at the Knicks-Cavs series and how much just, you know, Mikal Bridges being able to flash to the middle and hit a little jumper instead of Evan Mobley, who catches in the middle of the floor and can't score, and how that's killing the 4-on-3s for the Cavs. Like, you just need guys that can score in a variety of different ways. And I just think Peyton Watson brings like a really nice combination of athletic traits that could help the Lakers in a bunch of facets of the game, while also giving you like legitimate offensive upside that can make the Lakers even harder to guard. So like, I'm like way higher on Peyton Watson than I was even a couple months ago. And like, again, it's similar to the Gobert thing. I'm not sure how realistic it is, mm-hmm. but I think that if the Lakers had any opportunity to throw a bag at him and to poach him, it's something that they should go after.
I think the ceiling is high with him, so I'm curious to see what he can ultimately become. CeCe said, is there a scenario where stretching Vando's contract is the best option to save the first for another transaction. So I just did the math. We knew it was going to be about $5 million. But what the Lakers could do is waive and stretch Jared Vanderbilt's salary. The waive and stretch rules are really simple. You just take the remaining years on the contract, double them, plus one. That's the amount of time that you could stretch the salary over. So 2 years remaining on Vanderbilt's contract.
5 years.
5 years of Jared Vanderbilt. But $5.1 million and change is what we would call it, that the Lakers would then have in dead money on their books. So is there a scenario where it's the best option, and rather than giving up an asset in order to move Vando's salary? Sure, if there is that pot at the end of the rainbow or light at the end of the tunnel or whatever it is that you're going towards, right, that is going to incentivize you to do that. You don't just do it just so we can say, oh, we've got more flexibility. You need to have something you know you're executing if you're going to do that. It's not ideal to have dead money sitting on your books, but it's absolutely something you could do if there is a reward for doing so. And again, you would have to deal with, it's not the end of the world, but it's not also not an ideal situation to have $5.1 million less in cap space than everybody else in the NBA, with the exception of the other teams that have dead money on their books for the next five seasons. That's a long time to have Jared Vanderbilt's salary. Remember how long we were saying Luol Deng's contract is still on the Lakers' books? We'd be doing that with Jared Vanderbilt.
What a time.
I think so much of the wave and stretch thing with Vando just has to do with the bigger picture plan. I don't think you just do it just because.
Yeah.
But if it's the vehicle with which that brings in a legitimately very good player that you see as a long-term fit with the org, then I think it absolutely is worth it. I would just view Vando's extra five as essentially like part of the cost of that player.
Yes. Yeah. If it's somehow in a roundabout way, it contributes to getting Peyton Watson, you would absolutely just look and say, well, instead of paying Peyton Watson $25 million, we're paying him $30 million effectively. Right. Let me ask you, do you guys see a scenario where JJ Redick, who when given the opportunity has seemed to prefer to remove Jared Vanderbilt from the rotation, do you guys see that changing next year?
No.
Okay. So you probably
I think Vando would have to become a dramatically different player, which is, I think at this point, he's basically in his prime years. Like he is who he is. I think he could fit in certain roster constructs where you have a bunch of shooting and offensive talent. Well, I mean, the Lakers have the offensive talent part of it, and you could argue to some degree have the shooting part of it. But I think for Van, like trying to think about Vando on a contending team, like his role, I almost view him as a small ball five at this point. And if you have like that small ball look where maybe you don't have a great backup center, you go to Vando as a five, and he's sort of a pick and roll like DHO hub, which we've seen him be able to do some of that stuff with the bench groups. But I think you have to have a very particular roster build with that.
Agreed.
Sound Automotive Group said, if the only way for LeBron to get paid is a sign and trade, why does nobody think it's possible? It's LeBron going out as an asset with three firsts to land Giannis. I would have to assume in that scenario, LeBron's going somewhere that's not, because LeBron's not going to Milwaukee.
LeBron's not going to Milwaukee.
No.
He ain't moving. He ain't leaving LA unless he's going somewhere that has a really fucking good chance to win the championship.
Yep. Let's go with this one. I thought we learned our lesson with Russell about trying to win with star power. Leave Giannis. We were talking about Westbrook. Leave Giannis alone. Use the picks to go after Kessler or Trey Murphy the third.
Let me get on my soapbox here, okay? Because I think people have, the Russell Westbrook trade, just talking about it, might be my least favorite thing in the world. But Russ was like, I would say like a back end all star at the time, you know, still putting up all star level numbers. But I would say he's more like spots 10 to 12 on the East roster, which, you know, probably 22 to 24 for ranking all-star guys. And even then, I think that was a little overrated for where he was at. Giannis is a top five player. Giannis has proven to be, he's a two-time MVP. He's a finals MVP. He's like proven to be a guy that you could have as your number one in, you know, multiple deep playoff runs. Russ was just not at the same, like, peak for peak. Giannis is better, and Giannis is still in his prime, and Giannis is a much better player than Russ was when the Lakers traded for him. So I think that there's a false equivalency there of that. That's apples to oranges. And you also had a situation where Russ was coming in as the clear number three behind LeBron and AD, who were still both consensus top 10 players at the time. So it was like, I mean, I've made this point several times over the years. Like, if you were drafting the worst possible star to put next to those guys, it was Russell Westbrook. The only other guy I think would be in comparison was Ben Simmons, right? With his shooting limitations as well. But at least he was a 6'8 athlete who could defend at, you know, at the time at like an all defense level. But you needed shooting around LeBron and AD. We saw that during the championship season. We saw that during the next season. And then the Lakers went out and got a ball dominant player who was one of the worst high volume shooters of all time. So that fit. I don't think we should use the Russ example as, well, you shouldn't go get Giannis because of this. Like, Giannis would step in, be the clear number two on this roster, still a top five guy. And I think there would be a natural complementing to Luka. Now, he'd have to adapt his game, and Luka would have to adapt his game, but I don't think we should use the Russ trade as, because I also think it's a different slotting. Like, Russ came in as a number three. Giannis is coming in as like maybe even more of a 1B than even a number two. Just two totally different players, two totally different parts of their career, two totally different roles. So I don't see any correlation between Russ and Giannis.
I don't think we can use the Russ trade because it was, I mean, unquestionably one of the worst trades in NBA history. I understand why there is PTSD from that. It took a team that was a championship contender and made it decidedly not that. But I don't think we can take that trade and use that to dismiss any future superstar trade that would bring a star to the Lakers and say, well, it didn't work with Russ, so therefore it's not going to work with this either. And that certainly applies to Giannis. Again, that was, like you said, one of the worst fits you possibly could come up with.
If the Spurs took a bunch of their best role players and traded them for Zach LaVine, they wouldn't be very good either. Like, it's very much you traded out really good role players and a first round pick for a player that was masquerading as a superstar when he wasn't anything close to that.
Yep. Jermaine Thomas said, I asked Jovan this on his page. Curious what y'all think. Would you rather have Luke Kennard and Dean Wade at $20 million total between the two, or Rui for $20 million? That's interesting.
I'd rather have Rui.
I think I like Dean Wade too. I think I lean Rui too.
I lean Rui.
It's more like, for me, as great as he was in the Houston series, I think Luke is like at best on a true contender, like a ninth man. I don't think he's a top eight guy on a contender. So I think he might even get a contract that's like above where his slotting truly should be. So yeah, I just think, I mean, to me, it's actually more of like it's like Dean Wade versus Rui, which you could argue. I think Dean Wade has been pretty good for Cleveland. I think he's a better defender than Rui, but I would rather have Rui.
JV said, building the team around Luka will take multiple cycles, so taking 1 to 2 steps forward to build depth seems more sustainable than just adding Giannis. Where are we at on that? The depth versus Giannis conversation that we've been, you guys have said you're getting more in on Giannis. I've been leaning more into depth is just a reality of the modern NBA, that if you want to go anywhere, you simply have to have, because of the injury rate that we're seeing around the league, you have to assume players are going to be injured. And so if you don't have depth, you're asking for big, big trouble. So I'm still leaning more towards the depth model as not being necessarily a stylistic choice of, say, OKC or San Antonio, but just a necessity in today's NBA. You guys were more on the side of go get Giannis, swing for the fences with the top-end talent, zig where OKC and San Antonio have zagged, and then try to hit them with the top-end, top-heavy roster build. Where do you guys stand on that at this moment, now that kind of the dust has settled a bit on that conversation from last show?
I think Jovan wanted to make some more points about Giannis specifically. The one thing I will add is just simply this specific question. It just depends on what the depth is. Like,
sure.
It really just depends on what, like, if I feel like I'm getting Peyton Watson and I'm getting, you know, a couple other really good role players and I'm retaining Marcus Smart and LeBron and like all of it just comes together perfectly. Like, yeah, maybe I want the depth, but it just, so much of it just depends on what those players are in the context of Giannis. But I'm with Jovan where I'm starting to lean more towards Giannis should be a something that the Lakers seriously explore.
So I don't want to rehash, like we had a nearly, you know, 30-minute conversation last show about Giannis, but the spark notes would be, for those who remember spark notes back in school, I think, so I've been largely out on the Lakers trading for Giannis, so I want to preface the conversation with that. If you gave me a magic wand and you said you get to dictate the most, like, ambitious but, like, semi-plausible outcome for the Lakers, it's, like, add two new solid starters, retain all of, you know, retain Rui and Marcus and obviously LeBron and even Luke, if you can find a way to finagle the finances, and then get some, like, bargain guys and some under the radar young talent and build out a deep roster with two new starters that slots like Marcus and Rui are your sixth and seventh men. You have a much stronger top seven, top eight. You have some interesting young talent in depth on the back end of the roster and, like, go into next season with that group and see what you could do. Just as I go through the cap scenarios and what guys are likely to make and what the Lakers are likely to have available, I think that's very unlikely, barring LeBron taking a vet minimum, which we might get into that at some point. So I'm just looking at it like, I think the Lakers just might be in a situation where they either run it back and, like, add a piece or kind of swap out and, like, maybe add two or three pieces, but then you're also losing a piece or two and you're better on paper, but not to the level of San Antonio or OKC. So I think if we look at it through the lens specifically of how do you get to San Antonio and OKC's level, I think this, like, Giannis is the sweet spot to me of you have two top five players, which, like, NBA history suggests you have two top five players. You are a bona fide contender. You have two of the three best players in any matchup. You go into San Antonio, two of the three best players. OKC, two of the three best players. And Giannis is the rare big, he might be the only big in the NBA that can actually hang with both Wemby and Chet and even physically overwhelm them as a downhill force, you know, and going through their chest and having the speed and athleticism to defend them and hang with them defensively, but then offensively be like, I'm stronger than both of you and I'm going to get downhill. I'm going to put my shoulder in your chest. And, you know, that cute stuff that you're going to try to do at the rim, Wemby, like, I'm going to dunk on you. And so, like, where's the other guy that can do that? Like, I don't think it's Evan Mobley, and that's, I'm not even saying he's available, but, like, go through the bigs and show me the big that can hang with both of those guys and, you know, rack a closeout and just put a shoulder through their chest and dunk on them or draw a foul. Like, there's just not many bigs who can hold their own against those two specific guys. So I think as I talk through it, like, yeah, I mean, it's a dart throw. I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion that adding Giannis makes the Lakers the favorites or even puts the Lakers on the OKC San Antonio level. But if you can keep Austin in this scenario and you add Giannis and you have those, and you know, maybe you can retain LeBron, though that would be a pay cut. I think that's, like, one way to do it. Otherwise, every other center we're talking about, even Gobert, like, I don't know that Gobert can do anything to really bother. And maybe Giannis can't even either defensively, but at least he can offensively. So, yeah, they're in a tough spot. Like, OKC and San Antonio are both loaded for the foreseeable future. They both have young talent that's going to get better. They both have multiple draft assets to swap guys out or make upgrades. Like, those two teams are juggernauts. And I think that the Lakers have to get creative and ambitious to get on their level. And I don't think it's as simple as, like, Mitchell Robinson and Peyton Watson. I just don't know if that moves the needle enough.
I do think that if you told me there's a build where you can have Giannis plus decent depth, not the top end guys, but decent depth, sign me up, right? No problem. My concern is we wind up back in a, not to go back to the rush trade, but back in a scenario where you've got three guys making a lot of money and no quality whatsoever on the rest of your roster. If you can tell me there's a path to avoiding that, yeah, no issues with that whatsoever. That would be phenomenal for the Lakers.
Plus his injury history. That to me is the biggest thing. Yeah, you have no guarantee Giannis is going to stay healthy. Like, I mean, this is why I've been against it, because the depth, the injuries, I think he and Luka would both have to make some dramatic changes to their games that I'm somewhat skeptical they both will make and embrace. But this is what you have to do. Like, unless you're taking a long-term view here and being like, hey, this is going to be a 2 or 3 season build to really get to the OKC San Antonio level, because that's the alternative, is like, you can add a piece or two this summer. You can maybe try to make a trade at the deadline. You could do some moves next offseason. But I think this is more like a 2-year build if you're taking the more pragmatic approach. But like, do the Lakers have the patience to do that? We'll see.
All that being said, do the Lakers even have a, in terms of offers that could reasonably be out there for Giannis, are they even in the top 5?
It's fair, yeah. It depends how much they like the young talent that's being offered.
All right, let's go to... Actually, you know what? Let's give a quick shout-out to our sponsor before we get into our next chat questions. And that is, we're going to start with Prize Picks here. You guys have heard us talk about Prize Picks before. They do a fantastic job. Well, let's add Jason here. There we go. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. We appreciate Prize Picks being a sponsor here for the show. Guys, one of the ones I've been leaning into is Steph Castle. It's been at 11.5 points over the course of the previous games. Now it's at 12.5. I still like Steph Castle more than 12.5 points. Are you guys with me on that?
Yeah, I'm good on
hammer that. Hammer that one.
Hammer that for sure.
All right. From there, this is the one I've been struggling with. SGA, 30.5 points. He's done it once in his last 5 games, and I kind of feel like the Thunder don't necessarily need him to score like that. Instead, we're seeing the Spurs deploy a defense that is pushing other guys on the team to be their scorers. So I'm tempted to say he's going to get less than 30.5 points.
Yeah, the only pushback I would have there is the Spurs have allowed a ton of catch and shoot threes, and I wonder if we'll see an adjustment just in just how aggressive they are in their help, and if that leads to a game where Shea has 35, but the Thunder don't score as many points as a team. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they run back the same game plan.
The one I'm looking at here is Wemby at 14.5 rebounds, because he's been 17 plus rebounds through each of the first 2 games.
Yeah, and he kind of got his butt kicked on the glass at the end of game 2. He might come out super like ferocious on that end of things. I like that.
Okay. I just think, yeah, with how many minutes he's playing, he I think he goes 15 plus again.
Let's add that in.
By the way, for the series, he's averaging 31 points and 28.5 rebounds through the first 2 games. That's absolutely absurd.
I think he's been the best player in the series. Obviously, there's still more time left, but
we do still need to add a Thunder player. You can't have everybody from one team.
Okay.
All right. I mean, Alex Caruso, 10.5.
Let's go under on Caruso. Okay. The dude is literally due to miss some shots.
He's been over the last 2, but he's been under in 3 of the last 5.
He's had flames coming out of his body.
Yeah, the dude is literally like what, like 11 for 15 from 3 or something like that. He can't keep hitting every single 3 he takes.
All right, so we're gonna say regression is gonna kick in here with Alex Caruso. $10 entry fee would win you $37.50. If you guys want to get in on it, use the link in the description down below. That code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. Big shout out to Prize Picks. All right, let's go here. Denver. Denver gets Laravia, Chicago gets Vando, Connect, and number 49 from Denver, and the Lakers one future second, Cam Johnson, and 26 from Denver to LA. Denver clears salary, let them overpay to keep Watson. I don't have Cam Johnson as a negative value, so I don't think Denver's going to have to pay to get him off of their roster. I think somebody will be willing to either use a trade exception or cap space to take on Cam Johnson without requiring that the Denver Nuggets kick in a first round pick.
There we go. yeah, I mean, I think with Cam, He played better throughout the season, right? But I think overall he was underwhelming relative to what Denver wanted when they traded for him and what they frankly needed when they traded for him and what they lost with MPJ. For me, the big thing would be, this is where we kind of get back into the Rui territory of, mm-hmm. Honestly, any player they add to the rotation like needs to be a clear positive on the defensive side. And I think Cam Johnson can sometimes leverage his length well. Like he's got a solid wingspan and he can be like big on that end, but I think at best like an average-ish defender, and in some matchups is a clear below average defender. So I just don't think he's good enough for me. Like I understand, like the offensive fit, I understand it, right? And he'll get great shot quality, and, sure. and he'll probably shoot the ball well and give you a baseline level of 13 to 15 points offensively every night. But I don't think he's quite like the rebounder you want, nor the defender you want. And I think that's such an important thing that the Lakers need from that position.
The one thing I would say though is like, I would personally rather pay Cam Johnson $20 million a year than Rui $20 million a year. I just think that there's
sure. more I think he's better.
Yeah. Like they're like, even though like Cam's not a great rebounder, but he's about as good a rebounder as Rui. Like in terms of how well he's rebounded over the last couple of years in a Lakers jersey, he's more useful on the perimeter. He's better as like a decision maker driving closeouts. Rui obviously is a better wide open 3-point shooter and he's got a better one dribble pull up. But like, I just think overall he's just a more useful basketball player in a bunch of different facets. So like, if it was one of those things, let's say we were talking earlier about just like signing a bunch of specific players to fill up cap space there, it just, in terms of that equation, I would rather have that chunk tied up with a guy like Cam than a guy like Rui. I don't think I'd give up any sort of draft compensation for Cam though.
This trade specifically is a no-brainer to me. You're moving off of Laravia and Vando and Dalton Connect, plus, and you're turning them into Cam Johnson, and you're getting paid a first-round pick to do it.
Yeah, you do that.
I'm doing that in a heartbeat, but obviously I don't think that's super realistic. I can answer this one real quick. Kevin said, I don't get, if we're sending out matching salary for Giannis, why won't we still have the $50 million in cap space that we had initially? Because the reporting that we've seen has been more the Lakers would use up all of their cap space to just take the salary off of Milwaukee's books rather than send back contracts that the Bucks don't want. So the Bucks would clear cap space in the deal. They would also generate a giant trade exception by doing that. That's why it's not, the Lakers are not, in these scenarios that we've heard or seen, the Lakers are not sending back salary. So that's why they'd be using up their cap space there. This super chat said, if I told you next season the Lakers will have Peyton Watson, Melton, Marcus Smart, Thybulle, Okogie, Adu, Rob Williams, Jackson Hayes, and Nick Richards. That's some defense. This is Trev's ideal offseason. Okogie over Jake, Matisse for the 15th spot. And I love it. Any of those guys that you don't like as targets?
Could you repeat them quickly?
Yeah, sure. It's Peyton Watson, Marcus Smart, De'Anthony Melton, Matisse Thybulle, Josh Okogie, and then you'd still have a dude, Thero, Rob Williams, Hayes, Nick Richards.
I like those guys. I just don't think there's enough shooting collectively among that group, particularly the Melton, Thybulle, and Okogie. I mean, I know like on paper, so like, you know, Thybulle's had his stretches where he shoots well. Okogie shot decently for the Rockets. But I mean, we saw Okogie against the Lakers, and he was a guy that he was a taser. He was a guy that they just ignored and were like, Josh Okogie, shoot as much as you want. And he got played off the floor. So I would say my one fear with that group would just be, I think definitely better defensively. And like, I see the vision with that. I just would maybe want to tweak one of those guys for a guy who's a bit more of an offensive threat or shooter.
I agree.
Q Spade said Caruso's performance in the conference finals should get Rob fired. I don't think Rob Pelinka is getting fired.
It's not going to change anything, but
it doesn't change anything.
It is not. It continues to age poorly. Just yes. When you think the Caruso trade has aged about as poorly as it can, it gets worse.
It gets worse.
It's one of the most underrated pieces of the whole thing that happened with the Westbrook trade. Is there was a like the, it was also they took on salary as part of that deal, which ended up being part of the calculus when they let Caruso walk.
Guys, I'm out of ideas regarding what should LA do. We need wings, forwards, bigs, and 6 foot five and above guards. Rob is on the clock. There is a lot. That's the challenge. You know, we talk about the Lakers and oh, they've got all this cap space potentially, but there's also a lot they have to accomplish. And unfortunately, it's not like they've got that cap space because guys that weren't being used on the end of the bench are falling off the roster. It's guys that are useful, guys that they would ideally like to have back on the team. You know, Rui Hachimura, Luke Kennard, Marcus Smart, DeAndre, these are the guys that have contracts that are ending. Oh yeah, and that LeBron James guy. So everything is going to have an opportunity cost to it that they do this summer. I wish it was. They had like three contracts sitting on their books that were just weighing them down, that were not useful players, and those guys are gone, and you got your whole core, plus you get to add to it now. But that's not the situation that they're in. So it's going to be a very difficult challenge to make significant steps forward without at the same time taking steps backwards, because the path to changing out your roster could largely come via losing guys that were important to the team's success this year.
The only thing I'll add is like when we just have these theoretical discussions about the roster, we are looking and trying to address certain needs, certain deficiencies, but every roster has needs and deficiencies. OKC is maybe like as close to a perfect roster just in terms of their depth and versatility as it gets. But like even OKC, we've seen in previous seasons, they've had a Luka problem this season. And in previous seasons, they've had a LeBron problem. Like I think those big apex predator wings who can attack against their smaller perimeter guys, like that can be an issue for them, right?
No, they're struggling with Steph Castle.
I mean, the struggle with Steph Castle, like, I mean, they're, yeah, I mean, you saw Dylan Harper go through Lou Dort's chest, right? And they at times can struggle with defensive rebounding, and they give up a ton of threes. So, like, and, you know, part of that schematic, but like, point being is like, no roster is perfect. Every roster is going to have deficiencies. So, when we're talking through some of these things in terms of a positional need or a deficiency with the roster, like, yes, there are some things that are at a minimum of the Lakers need to get younger, they need to get more athletic, they need to get better defensively. I think that needs to be the focus this summer. But if we're talking through some of the minutiae of like, could they use a better backup center or could they use a better this or that, like, yes, they could, but every roster has some sort of limitation where it can sound daunting and it can be like, oh, well, the Lakers basically need an entirely new 15-man team. And like that's not the case. We're just talking through what we're nitpicking here a little bit, right? And it's okay to nitpick, but going into next season, even if they knock it out the park, there's still going to be some things you wish were better. It's just part of building a roster.
Yep.
The championship team couldn't, the 2019-2020 team, they couldn't shoot. Remember, that was the issue with them. And it didn't matter. That's what you're looking for, right? It's finding a team that's good enough to where whatever their deficiency is, isn't going to matter. And there is no point. I've been making this point a lot this summer, but or this offseason. There's no version of this where come August, we're looking at the Lakers roster and going, yep, that's it. They're the best team. Everything's set. You've checked every box. Done, right? That's not going to happen. You're not going to go into the season with the confidence of knowing that you've got the best roster out there and your team is just going to steamroll everybody. There's always going to be areas that are going to need improvement. The question is, what can you maximize? What can you try to boost on this team? And at the same time, lower as many deficiencies as you can. And it's never going to be perfect. And that's just the way that it is. This comment said, LeBron is arguably the greatest of all time, currently still great, but the August comment, perfect example of why LeBron hate exists, hashtag exhausted of the antics. I wish he hadn't have included August. I wish he had just said June and July, because the August part, no team's going to want to wait till August for LeBron James to make a decision, unless, of course, LeBron is willing to take way less to the point where it's doesn't really matter what cap situation teams are in. Otherwise, if you've got teams trying to hold on to cap space or hold on to an exception rather than sign free agents and waiting and waiting and waiting on LeBron, that can be a frustrating situation. At the same time, I don't also understand why LeBron might want to wait and say, you know what, this could be my last year. I need to know who's on a roster or not. Go make your moves, and then I'll figure out what I'm going to do from there. So all that said, guys, I don't think LeBron will literally wait until August to figure out what it is that he's doing. At least I hope not. But I also didn't love hearing him say, August. Wish he had just stopped in July. That would have made everybody feel a lot better.
Can you, so I've been so keyed in on the conference finals, I didn't even see this. What did LeBron say?
LeBron said he hasn't even thought about the summer, hasn't thought about what he wants to do in free agency yet. So I haven't even gone on my family vacation yet. Said, I'm going to get into the off season and then we'll figure out what's what, see what I'm going to do. And, it may take some time. It'll be end of June, July, August before, you know, decision gets made. Of course, I'm paraphrasing all that. But that's basically what he threw out was it may not come immediately. It's something that's going to take some time and we'll see how everything all comes together. It may be June, July, or August.
Yeah, that's not realistic. I think you could wait. I think he could wait till August if he was willing to take a vet minimum.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's about it. Every other team's going to want some sort of answer.
I mean, the only logic to that would be who has the best roster by the end of July. Mm-hmm. And then among the teams that he would consider playing for, and then just seeing what's the most competitive situation for me. I'm going to go there for a vet minimum. If he wants to approach it that way, he obviously can take, I mean, he could wait until October if he so chooses. Right. So, but if it is that approach, I mean, then the Lakers, that's why Brian Windhorst yesterday said on ESPN that the Lakers would have to renounce his rights to start free agency at that point. Like if that's the way he's going to approach it. I don't think he's going to take that long. I think it'll be more a late June, early July thing, but he's obviously within his right to take as much time as he wants. There just will be a consequence of will probably only be vet minimum contracts remaining.
This one says that the Cavs big men become available. Do the Lakers go all in? Even if it's a sign and trade with LeBron, would you do it? Who can the Lakers realistically get with a trade with Vando and Dalton Connect and a first for? I think you probably have to give up the first just to move off of Vando and Connect. So you're not getting anything there. But I'm assuming if a Cavs big man is available, it'd be Jared Allen and not Evan Mobley. Should the Lakers be interested in going after something like that? Or is that maybe the, if you do have to sign and trade LeBron James somewhere, and LeBron says, I want to get back to Cleveland, is Jared Allen like the ideal return in terms of what you could maybe kind of realistically hope to get?
I just don't understand if I'm LeBron, why I'd want to go to Cleveland without Jared Allen. I mean, Jared Allen and essentially that two big lineup kind of anchoring things defensively so that he can have more chill mode. I just think the Cavs, if they lose Jared Allen, don't become anywhere near as good a basketball team, even with LeBron.
Not a big Thomas Bryant guy?
Not a big Thomas Bryant guy over here.
I agree.
Let's give a shout out to a sponsor real quick, then we'll get to a few more of your questions. And this one is a big thank you to SeatGeek.
So the NBA playoffs are obviously a grind, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks. And so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set at the end of July, July 31st. I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature. And they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously, it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right, and a big thank you to SeatGeek. Thoughts on Eric Pincus's trade proposal? I know we were talking about that a little bit before we came on the air. Jovan, do you recall off the top of your head what exactly that deal was?
I think it was Austin and matching salary plus a first and a swap for Giannis and two trade exceptions. I can find it here quickly. I think it's too low on draft capital was my initial, I think adding in Austin, you are making a more competitive offer depending on what Milwaukee's trying to do. Here we go. I'm pulling it up here. Giannis, a $12.4 million trade exception and a $4.2 million trade exception to LA. Milwaukee gets Austin, Vando, Jake, Dalton, Nick Smith Jr., 2031 first, 2032 protected pick swap. I don't see any scenario, but I think you have to give up two firsts at a minimum, whether that's the 2026 first or the 2033 first. I don't see how you get a Giannis trade done where, especially throw it in like Vando's not a positive contract. I know you're salary matching here, but I don't see a world in which Milwaukee accepts one pick and one swap for Giannis. I think you need at minimum two firsts, but they're probably looking for three plus firsts. So I just think that's too low on the draft capital side.
In addition to a negative value contract like Vando, plus would Austin go to Milwaukee, right? He would have to agree.
That's the other part of this.
So, I mean, if this were on the table for the Lakers, I'll drive Austin to Milwaukee myself. I would do that and that deal in a heartbeat, right? But this deal, I just don't see how Milwaukee would take this.
So much of the Giannis conversation for me is more philosophical. Like, I just think the Lakers need talent. I think the reality is that the Wemby, Hartenstein, Chet problem will actually increase his price and make some team that would otherwise not have considered pushing that extra asset in, consider pushing that extra asset in, because as Jovan so perfectly pointed out on Tuesday, like Giannis is in a lot of ways the best possible player you could even imagine having for that specific problem.
That's Sam Amick was making that point in The Athletic in a piece this morning as well, that Giannis, that's kind of the buzz right now, is that Giannis's asking price for Milwaukee is indeed going up with every game that Wemby plays and plays well, because teams are like, oh shit, we need somebody to throw at that guy, and Giannis is probably the best option there. So it's a thing where he probably is the guy that you'd want in order to do that, but there's going to be a number of teams that say, can that be our counter to Wemby? Let's take a look at this. Would you swap Franz Wagner and Kane for AR and Adu? It would have to be a sign and trade.
What's the use of Franz Wagner on this team?
That's the...
Especially with his injury history. I do think Franz is a useful player. It's just it's so theoretical at this point. And he is multiple years in a row now in the heart of his prime, just not been able to stay on the floor.
Yeah, that's the... Are you better if you turn Austin Reeves into Franz Wagner?
I think Austin's just a better player than him.
Yeah.
At least right now.
Better defensively, but I think you're worse offensively.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, why not package Austin and Rui, so two guys who are free agents, for guys like Brooks and Maljewacz, with other assets to get pieces that can pass, dribble, and shoot? I mean, I think I'd rather have Austin Reeves than Dylan Brooks.
I think I'd argue that, I mean, I know you're not necessarily, or I'm not going to speak for what he meant by this, but like, I think trading Austin and Rui for Brooks and Maljewacz, you actually are getting worse at dribbling, passing, and shooting across fair. All three categories.
Yeah. I don't think I would make
like Austin's trade. A much better ball handler and passer than Dylan Brooks, and Rui's a much better shooter than Dylan Brooks, and Maljewacz is a project backup big man right now.
It's fascinating. In the sense that, like, okay, you're getting two starting caliber players back, and you imagine this universe where you have, you know, LeBron and Marcus and Luka alongside Dylan and Malawach. It's like fascinating. It's just overall, like we were talking about earlier, I think you're getting a project big that may or may not be the right guy for the future, and you're getting rid of a reliable secondary ball handler, which, as good as Brooks was scoring the basketball this year, I actually think he's more of like an on an island scorer, not a guy that could carry a unit offensively for, you know, a stretch with Luka off the floor.
Agreed. Agreed. Should we build more towards beating OKC or the Spurs?
It's got to be both, my friends.
Yes.
we'll tell you in a week and a half.
Yeah, right.
Like, guys, let's look at it like very simply. They will, in all likelihood, be the 1 and 2 seed every year for the next 2 or 3 years. They're young and deep, which is the recipe for winning in the regular season. With that being the case, you literally can't win the West unless you beat both of them, regardless of what seed you have. So from that standpoint, you've got to be prepared for both, which is something I think it makes the conversation complicated when you're talking about what players to go after. You know, like, even like if OKC were to shortchange Hartenstein, the idea of paying Hartenstein to join your team comes with these twofold benefits, where it gives you a weapon to potentially deploy against Wemby and against Chet, but also it takes him away from OKC, which is like a huge deal. I wonder if we're going to see somebody overpay Hartenstein literally just to get him off of OKC at some point in the next couple of years.
Could. I really think one of the interesting things about the NBA is it's become such a giant game of rock, paper, scissors, where like, for example, I mean, like Minnesota, great at beating Denver. They get into a matchup with San Antonio, though, that's not such a good matchup for them. It's very much like a styles make fights situation, where it's not just what is your overall quality as a team, it's who do you run into in the playoffs, and are you well situated to deal with that team or not? And it's easy to say, well, you need to have the versatility to deal with any team. That's much more difficult to actually do. But it's becoming a thing where who you line up against come playoff time, and whether or not what you bring matches up well is a big factor in how far teams advance.
And for the Lakers, I think they have a ways to go in matching up with both of those teams.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, they really struggled with ball pressure and point of attack defense. And yeah.
All right, let's throw this to one last sponsor, and that is Shopify, and then we'll finish off with a few more questions before we head off to a holiday weekend.
Starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. There's always that moment before launching something where you're thinking, is this actually going to work? Whether it's starting a business, launching a product, or building something online, there are a lot of moving parts, and having the right tools behind the scenes can make a huge difference. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand. It's also packed with helpful AI tools that can write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And Shopify helps you get the word out with email and social media campaigns, so you can reach customers wherever they're scrolling. Plus, everything you need, inventory, payments, analytics, and more, is all in one place. So it's time to turn those what ifs into cha-ching with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/LakersPod. Again, that's shopify.com/LakersPod.
All right. Thank you to Shopify. All right. Let's go here. With all these NBA podcasts available, I think I hear Trevor's voice more than my own wife's and Jason and Jovan's voice more than my girlfriend's. Sounds like you got a complicated life there. I hope we can bring some peace and simplicity to it through basketball.
I swear, though, this is a thing where, like, when I meet couples out at Laker games, and, you know, someone will recognize me or whatever, it'll be like the girlfriend will immediately be like, you know how many times I've had to listen to your show like as we're falling asleep at like 1 a.m. and like this is a thing, and we appreciate it.
Absolutely, we sure do. And best of luck juggling that, my friend. Best of luck. Do you think Luka will leave if they don't make major changes and are not making a deep run because he's getting older already and joins another superstar like Ant, or goes east to Miami. How big of a threat is it, do you guys think, that Luka could, let's say this next season, this offseason does not go swimmingly, they get into the season, they're not in that contender tier, does the pressure start to rise about Luka potentially moving up?
I think so. I think just in general, it's about progress. Like, to the one of the earlier questions we had regarding the point you made, Trevor, and like the reality of not being able to reach the OKC San Antonio level, it's just each cycle you should have a better basketball team than you did in the previous cycle. If you're not showing clear progress in that direction, then I think there's a problem. And I think that could be the thing that could get Luka to start having big picture conversations about whether or not he's in the right place. But if they're a better team in training camp than they were to end the season, if they make some small tweak at the deadline, or if the team is progressing well before that point, if they make another set of moves the following offseason and it feels like, oh man, training camp 2027, the team is just better than they were the previous year. Like, if there's clear progress, I think Luka's going to be in the long game. But if there's not clear progress, I think he's going to look at it and feel like he doesn't have the right partnership.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. We'll finish with this. John says, what's stopping Ballmer from wrecking the Lakers' plans? He has more cap space to sign LeBron, Austin Reeves, and Marcus Smart or Rui. Tradable assets to get a big and a wing, plus the fifth pick. Kawhi's contract. So the Clippers right now, they could have cap space. They don't project to have more cap space than the Lakers do currently. Stars would not need to move. But if they wanted to move off of salary, if they wanted to move off of Kawhi's contract, something like that, I think they certainly could. And maybe they could try to go poach some of these Lakers guys or something like that. But as they're presently constructed, the Clippers don't have the cap space to go be the boogeyman and just go after all of these Lakers guys and try to steal them all away. And that's not the current situation that they're in.
I'm looking at their cap sheet. I mean, they've got about 120-ish million guaranteed, and then they have a bunch of like Bogdanovich, $16 million team option, Brooke Lopez team option, Nick Batum. So like they could reject those, but then you have Jordan Miller and Kobe Sanders, so I think you'd want to keep on their sub $2.5 million team options. You got Chris Dunn, which is non-guaranteed, Cam Christie non-guaranteed. So like they have some money to play around with. I think they could theoretically get to the $30 to $35 million range with their finances. And then can you dump Isaiah Jackson making $7 million? Like, I don't know. You could maybe play with some money there and get to 40-ish, but they could be a factor, but I don't know. I don't think they're gonna get LeBron or Austin plus one of those other two guys. I think it's probably more of an either or situation. But certainly if they want to be aggressive and try to screw the Lakers, they could try to do that.
Yeah, if that's something they aspire to. I'm not sure if that's what they'd be looking to do or not.
When I saw the Clippers as like a potential LeBron destination, I would be floored if LeBron or Austin went to the Clippers.
LeBron's taken a couple shots at them through the years too.
When I saw that, I was like, there's literally no chance. Like, LeBron in a Clippers jersey is a thing that happens.
Like, the Lakers would have to really piss him off to the point where he wants to stick it to them. Like, I'm gonna go over to the Clippers. You know what I mean? Like, that type of thing. I don't know. I don't see LeBron having enough deeply rooted hatred in the Lakers to go join up with the Clippers. Whether or not he has to plant trees, I don't know. But all right, let's finish with this. I think keeping Vando's contract to do a trade and go even further above the cap is the best interest. The Lakers can take outgoing $8.5-ish million for him. Problem is, I think he's negative value. I mean, it's pretty simple there. I think teams would want something to take Vando's contract. They wouldn't be excited about absorbing his deal.
Yeah, it's not high enough where it's like untradeable. Like if he was making $20 million, I think that's basically an untradeable, like, I mean, you have to attach even more to get off of it. It's at a sweet spot where like you could see a team talking themselves into it with an asset, but like you're gonna have to give up an asset. It's just, yeah, he's overpaid by a decent amount.
$25 million over 2 years is a lot to play a basketball player, pay a basketball player that probably can't play for you.
Yes, indeed. Though apparently it's not too much to pay a coach to not coach for you. Oh, Jason. Jason Kidd, man. I still can't believe they're going to pay him that much money to go sit on a beach somewhere. But
with his giant collar.
That's right. He can spill as many drinks as he wants now. All right, everybody. We appreciate all of you for joining the show. Guys, we got through the bulk of the Super Chat questions. There are a few that we will hang on to, but Jason, Jovan, guys, we got through a lot on today's show. I'm proud of us.
Me too. That was fun.
I'm too. Good to see you guys. Hope everyone enjoys their weekend and Memorial Day, and we'll be back next week.
Yes, indeed. We'll be back next week. We'll have more shows then. And again, if we didn't get to your Super Chat, I am saving them. Don't worry. We will address them. But again, thank you, everybody. Have a fantastic weekend. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.